Hey, welcome to the podcast. This is Why We Create. Thanks for being here, everyone.
Why We Create is a podcast that explores the behind-the-scenes stories from artists, inventors, and the daringly creative.
Let's stretch our imaginations a bit and enter the realm of surrealist art. Aquatic beasts fly through the air, reptilian birds get on the train with you, and aliens live among us, and it's not even a big deal. Nicolas Baron-Forgues tells us about the universe he is building and how his art becomes larger than life. Let's get into it.
Welcome to Why We Create, the official Wacom podcast, where we explore the behind-the-scenes stories of artists, inventors, and the daringly creative. My name, as you may know, is Megan. Hi, me. I am joined, as always, by my faithful co-host, Christopher.
That's me. That was almost cute. Like Mario, like, that's a me. Sorry. But I'm Christopher. This is my voice. Yeah.
Thank you, Christopher, for your voice. Today, we're going to take a lovely journey to a very magical and surreal land where some very silly, kind of awkward, kind, I don't want to say terrifying, mischievous, colorful, delightful monsters roam freely across the countryside, looking like they definitely are into mischief. It's adorably good chaos. We are speaking to a gentleman who is all the way across the Atlantic Ocean from us right now, French artist, illustrator, fabulous human, Nicolas Baron. I'm going to slaughter your last name.
Fogg.
Fogg. Fog. Nope, that's another
one. That was Fog. Almost perfect.
Oh, so close.
Hello, guys.
I apologize for my French. No, so thank you so much for joining us, Nicolas. I'm super, super excited.
And thanks
excited
a lot
to talk
for inviting me. I am super happy, really. Super happy to have this moment to talk with you.
I'm excited. I can't tell you how many times Megan has just like sent me an Instagram message of your work for like years at this point. And I'm just like, yeah, I know. He's awesome. So I'm stoked to finally have you on and chat with you, the man behind the scenes here.
That's me.
So in your own words, Nicolas, tell us who you are. And what do you do?
Okay. Nicolas. Everybody calls me Nico. It's going to be more simple for everybody. And since Perfect. The year, I think it was 1999, I finished the studies of arts in art school. And I am like, it's always difficult, you know, for me to say, I mean, what I am, illustrator, artist, I don't know. I'm doing picture as freelance and defending very, very hard my universe. Because for me, the say that you were saying, a thing that we're speaking about at the beginning, the creatures, you know, this kind of strange atmosphere, universe, bestiary. That's the most important thing for me, what I am defending all the time. After whatever the technique I'm using, everything, like to try different techniques, different medium. Since all those years, I have really take super big pleasure to try a lot of techniques, work with a lot of people, but with this universe. That's the most important for me. So I'm the father of those creatures.
Father of the creatures. I like that. That's good. I was really curious what you were going to say there, because like illustrator, I've seen your work though in like 3D modeling. So you're obviously a muralist. I've seen toys of your work, sculptures of your work.
That's it.
It's just you have like these like really brilliant concepts and these monsters, and Father of Monsters is maybe a great title.
Honestly, you know, thanks for those words. That's very nice. And the thing is, when I say that it's the most important for me, it's really that, because for example, during some years I was teacher in an art school, you know, with students. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing I was telling them, whatever the, for me, the, you know, the kids all want to have the biggest technique ever, you know, and whatever, original work, digital illustration, whatever. And for me, the technique is something that you learn, and it's not that important, you know. You can always increase your technique, okay, but having personality, having singularity. For me, when someone tells me, wow, this picture is very strange, thank you very much. That's the best compliment ever.
Thank you.
Yeah. It makes me feel happy. Sometimes it makes me sad or disgusting. I don't know. Even if it's not a compliment, it creates something, you know, an emotion to the people. So that's the most important, really. And so after the technique, as you said, I like to try to, I don't know, in French we say décliner, but trying all those techniques. I love digital because, and we're together also because we have this common passion with Wacom and, you know, and thanks to the all those material, I've been able to do whatever I wanted in digital illustration. But trying big, small, world sculpture, everything, that's what is crazy in our job. You know, I love that. I'm really crazy with this, trying, restarting from the beginning all the time, doing ugly things. And sometimes when I try a technique, I fail everything. But really being able to touch to so many things, that's really fascinating in this job for me.
One thing we hear often is that love of discovery, the like discovery process when you get to find a new medium, when you get a new tool, when there's a new feature set, if it's digital, learning how to animate, putting to actually taking an illustration and actually making it a physical object or a toy
that
or a
is
sculpture
amazing.
Is so cool. But that that discovery process of like, now I need to figure out how to do 3D renderings to sculpture or 3D printing or whatever, like there's so much fun in that trial and error moment that it's just exciting to hear from artists of like, that's the hook.
And also trying techniques and collaborating with people. For me, it has been one of the best school after school because I have worked as collectives, my friends, for almost 10 years. We had collectives with individualities, super strong personalities. And we were working a lot for commission and illustration for advertising and everything. And everybody was putting his ego and his ego on the side, his specialty to help the group to do new things. And so it has helped me so much also to be able to jump from one thing to another, being able to listen to someone saying, telling me, you're not going on the good way. Okay, allez, no ego on that. I listen to what he's saying. Clack, 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 clack. I have built my career like that, working with a lot of people and trying different things. And you know, we're speaking a lot about talents too, okay? So I don't really believe in that personally. Being talented, you need to work crazy, period.
Yes.
Because and learn all the time things, being curious and everything. For me, there are people with more ideas than others. That's all. That's the thing.
Yes.
So I was an only child. I have a brother now, but we have 18 years difference. For a long time, I've been alone, but I'm playing in my room, you know, and I needed to find things, you know, to have fun with my G.I. Joe things, in creating tournament of Kung Fu, drawing the stadium around, any kind of thing, you know. And I don't know if it helped me. And my mom had a video club, which I think that helped me. All the first science fiction movie and everything, I think it helped. But I think at the beginning, I probably had maybe ideas or a personal world or something in mind. And I think that is what's making sometimes the difference. The talent, I personally don't really believe in that.
I feel like talent's like a 5 to 10%, but it's a really intangible thing to say, like, what is talent? Because I do think it's reflective of time and effort and that desire and curiosity to learn, because there's so many skills that people can learn by practice, and practice makes perfect. It you know, that's a saying.
You were saying that, like, when you were a kid, you were like watching all these movies, and one of our questions was going to be like, when did your love for monsters start? Like, when did you start creating this universe?
I think it arrived at that moment, you know, because really I remember, so I was really a kid, super little boy. I was in the middle of the video club, and my mom told me, okay, but you can watch that. So that was the first Star Wars, I guess. And there was Close Encounters, you know, of Spielberg and those kind of things. And I think she had Goldorak in French, the big robot manga with the horns like that. And he has an axe like that. He was always fighting against super kaiju monsters, super big. I didn't care a second about cars, about firemen. I didn't. That was monsters for me. That's all. I was obsessed by that.
I love that.
Creatures, monsters, aliens, Martians. And it started drawing that. And that was really nice because when you were a kid, honestly, boy, you don't draw super good, let's be honest. But after doing creatures, it's very easy, even when you're a kid. Okay, he has a nose like that. He has three fingers, three different sizes. Nobody cares. It's a monster, you know? And I remember at school, we had at the first school, we had classes. And the teachers was asking the kids, okay, you have to draw something. What's in your mind? And me, that was really crazy. Okay, it's a dragon saving a princess. And he has a tail of 100 meters. He has teeth that has 50 meters. And they were like, okay, what's in the head and the mind of this kid, you know? But finally, I've always drawn that. With the time, I've always been crazy with, video games, cinema, crazy cinema movies. Really, I see there are not a lot of fantastic and horror movies that I've not seen, honestly. Monster movies. And I mean, it's all of this is part of my references, really. Yeah. When I was a kid, don't talk to me.
Speaking my language.
I speak your language. Good. Super.
Yeah. I'm very much, it's sci-fi, fantasy, horror. Yeah. I love a good creature. Do you have a favorite, I'd say maybe within the last decade or so, a favorite character or creature that you've seen in pop culture, whether it be a movie or a video game, that you were this
It's yeah, so but for example, for me, the best creature ever is the creature of the Black Lagoon. 100%. It's the greatest ever. And now that I told you that, and next time you will have a look at the one picture, you will see that a lot of them have ears.
I was thinking
you
that.
See? Yeah. They are super aquatic creatures, finally. And I mean, it's completely different world, but I didn't say that just before, but I've been traumatized by SpongeBob. Traumatized. For me, it's the guy who created that. If you hear me, man, he's a genius, honestly. And there's something that I love in that is the way he has creating something that makes the kids crazy, but us also, because there is two lecture of it, you know? That's crazy. That's something that I like to do in my pictures. It looks cute, but it's a bit disgusting. You know, SpongeBob is eating ice cream, but he's drunk. That's crazy, really.
A lot of the texturing in SpongeBob is really, I can see kind of because you work with texture quite a bit. All of your stuff, I'm it's very simple shapes, but then you get close to it and you're even though it's a flat image, I feel like I could rub my fingers across it and it has a bumpy texture to it, but it's flat, obviously. You have such good three-dimensional form, but it's also flat.
Yeah.
But it also has a crazy texture to it. Your work is just I see it and I'm it kind of confuses me, which maybe goes into that surrealism a bit too. But I also I kind of see that in SpongeBob too, which is funny. Yeah.
You know, the in SpongeBob, that's this mix of flat colors, the background are painting on the cellulose transparent thing, but it's really more traditional. Yeah. And finally, my work is really completely that because I have also big references and I have big memories of the first time I've seen a painting of Archimboldo, you know, the faces full of vegetables.
The vegetables.
Dali and I'm going to say everybody, Jérôme Bosch, of course, at a moment I've seen that and I was okay. And so it's a mix of designing sometimes super simple, dumb characters, super pop, but in a traditional way, respecting the sense of the light, doing it more dramatic with the big shadows, the shadows on the floor. That's something that I loved in the Dalí's painting, you know. You always have super small characters and big shadows on the floor to create the perspective and have the different plans. It's really a mix of all those things. Voilà. But Archimboldo really, it has traumatized me a lot also.
I want to know the first response when Archimboldo showed someone a painting and it's it's a portrait, but your face is comprised of vegetables. Yeah. Your cheekbones are eggplants. I just want to know that reply, see that response of someone being horrified. Were they excited about it? Did they think it was just so ludicrous that it was brilliant?
I
don't know. I feel like that's such an interesting moment of
I think at the beginning people were considering him crazy. I think you know, at that period, if you were drawing like things that what the fuck, I think it could have been dangerous right. also for him, you know.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. Sure.
And he doesn't have a big production, huh? So he just have paintings.
No.
Huh? But yeah.
A few. They're few and yeah. they're brilliant and we love them. But I do think also to go back to technique, and I think Christopher, you brought this up with like your textures and your artwork and the components in which you put in those techniques, is that it's not breaking that, I would say, like there's the traditional foundations of art or painting, of lighting, mm-hmm. texture, contrast, things like that. You're still adhering to those, but like stretching them to a point that I feel like his work also sort of did that. It's like it adheres to the standard of portraiture. Like they're painted magnificently. They're beautiful. The lighting is great. It like has depth and drama. The components in there, the vegetables are like ludicrous because they're a face. It floats that line of like, it's done well, but what are we looking at?
Yeah. Honestly, I love those kind of comments.
Can you tell us about like a big break project for you? Did you have one of those where you're like, okay, this is like, I'm an artist now.
Super complicated because I love a lot of projects for a different reason, but you know, and I'm gonna start with something. You know, when we were just group of friends living together in our small house just after the studies, spending our days in pyjama, going to the PlayStation, to the office, to work. And we were like, oh, yeah, we're going to try to be freelance. And when the first big projects arrived, that's something I will remember all my life, honestly. Because we did like for big, big, big companies of France, mm-hmm. or we have worked for PlayStation or things like that. But on very important projects, important agencies from Paris, they were like team of 50 person around us, like calling all the time. And we were really kids. And that's something that was very important because we learned how to have responsibility, you know, and forget the stress. Mm-hmm. Finally, the thing mm-hmm. were supposed to be in the subway, printed super big. And really, I tell you, we were like kids. That was, I will remember that all the time. And so that was super nice. You know, one of the biggest sensation is also one of the first time you do a super big wall. Like mm-hmm. I've been painting. I've never had a career like I've never done graffiti as you know, tagging the tags, throw up anything. I was never interested in that hip hop culture, whatever. It was not my thing.
Sure.
I just mm-hmm. used the spray as a medium. You know, that was the best one to do big things. Mm-hmm. Voila. I've never done street credibility. I didn't care about that. I just wanted to do super big drawings. So I've done a lot practicing in old factories and everything. And the day I've had the possibility to do something like big, it was like in Morocco, it was, 19 meters high and 15 large, you know. I speak in meter. So in feet, I don't know exactly how it is, but it's big. It's a building.
It's like 60 feet.
It's a building, complete building.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, very much. Yeah. And really, so, you know, that was what I told you at the beginning, this adrenaline mixed with stress, because if you fail that, people are gonna go, you know, about it costs the machine that they rent for you. The material is very expensive. Mm-hmm. You have this little pressure. You're in Morocco. It's not your country. So other people are going to receive your thing as everything, sure. you know. And when you finish it, you're like, wow, okay, I did it. And you know, I remember that really a lot. And after, honestly, the fact of painting walls, I love spending times, days in my office, working with the computer on digital thing. But sometimes refreshing the mind, traveling. I've had the chance to paint in a lot of countries, and it's really something that is crazy, honestly. And I've never had the experience bad because I'm choosing a little bit what I'm painting, you know. And really, in general, the contact and everything. I have good contact with the people. I speak Spanish too. So, bon, okay, if I go mm-hmm. in China or Russia and they don't speak, it's going to be complicated to exchange. But, I mean, I have good feeling with the people. And those are experiences, crazy, honestly.
For that project in Morocco, what was the time frame like from when you sent over the first concept, or even like concepting, figuring out what was going to go on the building to actually have it finished? What was the time span? How long did it take? And like, what was that process and journey like?
You know that they, most of the time, they don't ask you sketch. And that's maybe the scariest.
What?
Yeah. There are a lot of, because you know, there are a lot of artists, illustrator, whatever, who wants to, for that kind of project, I'm going to say street artists. So they move to a place, mm-hmm. you invite them, they do what they want. I'm part of the team that has done a lot of commission, and I love that. And I love having brief, and I love to work with people with things to do, mm-hmm. not to do, because I think you learn from that. So for me, it has never been a problem to do a sketch, but when the people don't ask, boom, bah, so I do what I want, you know?
You do what you want. And, yeah. And you have such like a unique style. Like, I think if we asked you to do like a mural or something like that, I feel like I would get like the general vibe of what you're going to do. So like I would trust you completely.
Yeah.
So but that makes sense. But like for one of like your first projects, if you don't have a sketch, that can be kind of intimidating.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, honestly. And intimidating for sure. And after it was, to answer to your first question, Megan, it was 9 days of painting. 9 days.
Nine days.
Like I told you, I'm sometimes a bit rude with myself. I start really when the sun is starting, and I end when there's no light anymore. And at the end, you're broken. My God, it's
sure.
I'm not the best at doing sport. Honestly, for me, that's my sport.
Voilà. That's when you, physically exhausting.
Yeah, it is. But the other thing that I really liked, you know, that I remember. So it's not project, but it's step in my work. You know, of course, the first exhibition, it's something also stressing as hell,
sure.
crazy. But it's the first day that I have started to see my things in volume. You know, in sculptures. Wow.
Mm.
And that since mm-hmm. it's not super long time ago. And since this moment, I have realized that really, and I'm going to talk to you about that because it's really what I'm working more right now, but I'm crazy with doing big installations, sculptures, and wow, that's another level. So seeing the photos of the kids like that, you know, close to the for them, it's, you know, very small kids when they see the characters, like, it's five times bigger than me and it's look alive. And you see in their eyes, it's like, the reaction is amazing. Yeah. That's really, so it's different step and not special in project in particular, because I really take care of always jumping to different medium and everything. I mm-hmm. could not be able to do just wall, just show, just digital, because I will be super bored really fast. But I mean, I'm always happy to start something new. So, well, I'm always enjoying the things.
Well, like we were saying at the beginning, you're trying all of these new things, but the universe is kind of, it's just the universe is coming to life. The universe is expanding a little bit. It's you still have like these monsters, these fanciful creatures, these surrealist ideas, but just a new mediums and maybe better ways to communicate what maybe is in your head, or like these ideas that you have mm-hmm. for these creatures.
But the thing of, you know, for example, what could be next? Artists are not super into that, but all the new technologies are opening mm-hmm. crazy doors, you know? I've tried so many things in augmented reality,
mm-hmm.
so many. If it's not done with the good intentions, if it's just something, it can be really not useful, not interesting. Mm-hmm. Virtual reality with the helmets and everything, you can do crazy things, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I would love to, you know, mix all those things. Do sculptures, you take it with your phone and the eyes are moving.
Yep.
It's unlimited.
I can imagine one of your monsters, sculpture, hold a phone up to it in AR and just have like other little guys crawling.
You imagine, yeah.
That's it. It would be amazing.
I always thought like the difference between like artists and people who say they're not artists is like people will see something and they see it for what it is, but an artist will see it and see what it could be. And like that AR glasses kind of like fits into that as well. And I was actually going to ask you that before, is like, as an artist, as a muralist, do you walk into spaces and just see canvases everywhere? Like, do you like walk down the street and are you like, is that's my next canvas type of a thing?
Yeah, a little bit for sure. Because when you see a wall, you see, oh, I would love to paint this one, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, and you know, there's, that's funny what you say, because I think you have seen in my work, there is also something that I love to do, and I'm doing more and more, is drawing on photos, you know, mm-hmm. and it comes from Roger Rabbit, you know?
I see that.
Yeah.
For me, that's one of the one that is still actual. It has not the touch of something from the past for me. It's still super okay when you watch it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I've seen it millions of times. And so when I visit places everywhere, I'm like, wow, imagine this scene. For example, I've never been to Portland, but I've been in United States a few times. And for example, in New York, I was like, oh my God, you know, in this place, it could be crazy, or visiting in China or the temple, I don't know where. I would love to draw my characters doing yee-haw on the top of this temple, you know, or whatever. That all the time, I'm doing that all the time. And you know what? That's something that I wanted to tell you just before. Also with the augmented reality or imagining those characters being alive, when I draw them, I make them speak. I imagine their attitude doing sounds like that. You know, I'm doing the sounds, so it helped me to imagine how they could be in reality. So it's everything in my mind. Well, most of them are pretty dumb, you have to know. So yes, I see Canva everywhere.
I love this. Really. Knowing that your characters have sounds and have a voice does make me very happy inside. When you have a really great character and something that is like silly or goofy, like, I don't know, it's like, I feel like that's just what artists do. You're thinking about things 360 of like, well, now it just is gonna say woohoo.
That's interesting what you say, thinking in 360, because it's really something that I'm learning to do. We have all the things to do that, mm-hmm. now, you know, and with the time I have met so a lot of people. So one day I'm gonna draw something like a character. I think that when I'm drawing it, I'm thinking, okay, this could be an installation, super cool. But mm-hmm. to communicate, we could create a song for that. And after blah, 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 and creating stories, it's really beautiful. The time passed, the technology is getting crazy, crazy, crazier and crazier. And it opens door unlimited for us, really. And you know what? I hope that the next step is going to be that someday I'm going to have the chance that someone proposed me to pitch like a cartoon, something like that. That could be the next step. And after that, so boom, Ali.
The mic drop. That seems like the logical next step for me. So
honestly,
we'll send this episode to some producers and
or an amusement park. Or an amusement park.
Oh.
Imagine that.
Park would be amazing.
The full immersive experience.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
And you have to walk through with AR goggles on, because, or like with like the glasses on. You know, you need the
For
Snapchat
example.
Glasses so you could.
That's the thing, but the problem is that
we only need $5 million. It's
fine. Yes, I wanted to say something less. $5 million. That's what I need.
starting.
Give me that.
Yeah. Why don't we take this moment right here, and we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back right after this. This podcast is brought to you by the team at the Wacom Experience in Portland, Oregon. The Wacom Experience is equal parts showroom, creative space, and classroom. We're open to the public and are a great place to hang out, get some work done, or take your creativity to the next level. To stay up to date on what's happening at the Wacom Experience PDX, along with information on upcoming events and workshops, make sure to follow us on social media. Our link in bio can be found in the show notes. The Wacom Experience PDX is located at 1455 Northwest Irving Street in Portland, Oregon. If you're in the area, stop by and say hi.
You gotta bring us back in, Megan. Nope. You're the captain of this ship.
You're just doing weird things. I'm going to drive us into the... I know. That's my monster noise. So thank you. We're back now. Welcome, everyone. We were talking a little bit about all of the places you've done your work. You've had the honor of having your work featured in amazing shows, magazines, galleries. What is or do you have advice for emerging artists and what they can do to get their work seen and picked up on some projects like the large projects you've worked on?
You know, there's something that I'm going to answer in two times in your answer, mm-hmm. because it reminds me a comment, an advice that someone gave me when I was beginning. Mm-hmm. He told me, take care of at the beginning or the first 10 years of never being too much here, too much seen. Stay a little bit always in the shadow, never disappear, stay here, but don't do too much so the people are going to be bored of you in 1 year. You know what I mean? Take the time, it works with ego because a person wants to have followers as hell. They do everything because they want to be famous. Well, famous on Instagram doesn't mean that you have a lot of job. I think we all know that, but anyway, mm-hmm. the thing is that a lot of person are not doing this, I think, for the good reason. But, you know, for me, being patient, working crazy, and have really something personal. I remember my students telling me, hey, why you think this drawing is not super interesting? I'm just drawing with a half of a millimeter pen, doing millions of dots every centimeter. So it's crazy, no? And I was like, no. It's not. And so, you know, being passionate, just really focus on what you have inside, do something mm-hmm. personal, and really not going too fast, I think, really. Mm-hmm. And also being not trying to follow, you know, the fancy of everything, mm-hmm. being focused on your thing. You're always going to have good news at a moment if you defend that so much. I'm saying millions of things at the same time, but yeah, being passionate really and not burning the step for me is very important. And you know what? I've had the chance in 17 years, I think. I've never been in a lack of job, never, you know? And I've always had the chance to, I've always have things to do. I'm living pretty well of my job. It has never gonna be a real problem. It's super nice, but I've never been super known in any discipline, you know. I try a lot of things. I'm always every year doing walls, having commission. I'm always having shows. I'm always a little bit everywhere, but I'm not exploding in any discipline. For me, that's very well, but I'm not working for my ego. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's my point of view, Mara.
That is great advice. Yeah.
Yeah. The career art is kind of a slow burn. Because it's like so often you put all of your stuff out there and you're like yelling into the void, look at me. But a lot of times, like, people don't, you know, and that's comes down to like Instagram algorithms. Like, are you making the right kind of reel? Are you using the right kind of sound to do a thing? But yeah, like you're saying, you just got to focus on doing mm-hmm. your thing.
Yeah.
And people will notice it.
The thing is that I'm really going to speak like an old person, but I don't care. But I think, you know, when you started this career and this job with Instagram and this thing, it can make you crazy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, you're running after something, you know, that, and it's not because you're going to be famous with that you're going to have this harmony in the job, having the feeling that you love what you do. It's two different things for me. Mm-hmm. Some people have both, and I'm super happy for them, and it's great, you know. But it's dangerous, I think. You have to be focused on the good thing for me. Yeah?
So you've shown work. We were talking about a little bit about travel in the last question, but you've had installations in China and you've done stuff in Mexico, Morocco, and all over Europe. And I'm wondering, do you have a special memory from traveling with your art?
Yes, I have so much. The paintings in Mexico, I will remember all my life because this is where I met my wife. So, and now we're married, everything. And so I will remember that for sure. She invited me to paint a wall. So that was special. Nice. Then after, one of the most particular situation was I was in Taiwan, and someone proposed me to paint the floor of a complete street, 100 meter long, 100 meter, you know, and I said,
incredible.
Thank you. But, you know, and another particularity that I have, I never say no. I never say no. If the project is interesting,
sure,
and I'm afraid, I say, of course, I'm going to do it. Let's go.
Sounds great. Yes. Yeah.
I mean, the solutions are always coming, you know.
Sure.
But this time, honestly, wow, that was something crazy. Because it was the first time I was painting the floor. The first time I wanted to paint like a giant phoenix and a giant dragon. Because they were like icons of the country, you know.
Yeah.
And they were full of pattern. Because imagine drawing a character of 100 meter, just doing the sketch, you're going to spend 3 days and it's going to be extra boring. This, it was a lot of details in the tail and everything. And it was like, if I fail a bit, it's going to be nice, whatever. And finally, the guy, Joe, who invited me, he told me, man, they're not going to walk on their icons. You have to find something different because it's so important for them. Okay, I didn't
super
think of this.
Super smart.
Yes.
Thankfully, so, he said something. Ooh.
Yes, yeah, hopefully he said. Hopefully he asked me for a sketch this time, you see. and after, I decided to, because it was in, I was the Kaohsiung was the name, and it was known for, there was the sea. So I was like, okay, so I'm going to draw the sea. And I'm going to draw everything like aquatic creatures, fish. And it was smarter to do that because the composition, I mean, you don't care if the fish is, you know, my character, sure. You see my fish. If it's like this, like that, he has a big nose, everything, it works. And if it's 2 meter more at the left or the right, I'm going to put a super, super small one. So the composition, the balance will be okay. Okay. When you have said that after and you arrive in the street and you're like, okay, boom. That was like crazy doing in a street, and you can imagine the density of people living there. Every day we have to deal with the problem of language, the problem of the fact that they don't care that you're painting. They need to go to work in the morning. So their scooter is parked there. So they're going to drive and they're going to go in your fresh painting. They don't care. It's their life and you're doing the thing. And for you're boring because you're taking the street. At the beginning, you're doing color thing and they don't know what's coming, you know. And when you're in the floor, you don't see. You have to go at the last floor to see the effect of it, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was playing with the people, riding in scooter, putting protection of the fresh painting, speaking with the guys with movements like that because they were not speaking English. It was amazing, really an experience, crazy. And at the end, when we were all going in the last floor and they say, wow, okay, and you realize what it is. And that was like so satisfying. It was honestly, it was crazy. Also in Mexico, I've painted in places. It was the biggest market in the world. It's called Central de Abasto. And okay. So it's 1 million worker every day, worker and people buying food. But they buy food for their restaurant.
Right,
they buy
okay.
food. It's not only you buying your salad, you know. Or you can, but it's more also super big quantities. And like you paint with millions of cars, people doing sound, people going with the food everywhere, all the direction. And you have to deal with that, you know, and it's completely amazing. So finally, it's better to, it's for the memories, it's better to paint in hard conditions because.
Interesting.
Sure.
When you paint in comfort, you have your machine doing up, down, a building. I'm not going to say that when you have done 5, 6, it's always the same. Of course not, but it's pretty comfortable. There are situations that are more complicated and that's more funny, you know, really.
Yeah. Makes for a better story. I'm glad you spoke to like some of the challenges that you had because that was going to be one of my questions. Because obviously painting something that's, would you say 190 meters long, that... in my head is so difficult. It's like just actually the physical painting of it is difficult. But then I was like, permitting, dealing with people, you know, acquiring the materials, acquiring the trucks, like how do you shut down a street? It's just the logistics of these paintings. It's just, it hurts my head sometimes just thinking about all the stuff that you have to go through. So I'm glad you spoke to some of the challenges that you were having.
Yeah, because as what you said there, you don't block the street, forget it. It's impossible. If you do it, 10 guys are going to come, are going to say, what are you doing? I don't care if you're painting, my friend. I need to go to work. My car is there. Yeah. So what? Okay, so we don't block the street, you know? Hey. And after, you can imagine painting the floor. You can imagine the temperature, Taiwan, humidity. I lost 7 kilos in 2 weeks. That was crazy.
Well, I'm thinking you're describing this, and I also, echo Christopher. I was curious about the difficulty. So painting a mural, oftentimes you're on like a scissor lift or a boom, and you're painting in front of you. Painting a street, that feels very awkward and physical, because are you bent over? Did you like how did you physically manage that? And then you'd mentioned having to go up a few stories into a building to look at it. Do you feel like, While you were painting, while you're on the street level painting, did you feel like you often would lose perspective of where your characters were and their shapes? Like,
honestly, at the beginning, the first days, I was sketching, but the choice of doing that kind of pattern, let's say, it was a good idea, really, because I knew I was not doing horrible, but there was a day I was super tired. Two guys in 2 seconds used their car and it did like a big line with the wheels on the fresh paintings. I'm doing the things with passion, and I most of the time super smiling and happy. But on the other side, I can burn very fast, you know, and become super red, and I can be it's the end of the world in 2 minutes, you know. Sure. It's passing fast, and my friend, he saw me, I was about to explode, and he told me, okay, now it's the moment, we have to go up, and you need to see that nobody cares if there's one lines of that of wheels, because nobody see. I mean, from the distance, it needs like it leans like 10 centimeters in 100 meter, man. It has no sense. And you have to forget the fact that it's not going to be clean. It's going to become dirty super fast. And it's like that. You deal with that. Like when you paint a wall, depending on the spray that you use, the sun is attacking the color. It's like that. Sometimes you paint, and when it's on the floor, people are, or the other painters are destroying it. It's the same, you know. You have to live with that. After, it's not your painting anymore. You let that there and leaves as it has to leave. So, but this time, that was really complicated. Honestly, after doing a wall, it was okay. First heel, finger in the nose. But yeah, so that was one of the super good experience. And after, I'm just jumping on what you were saying about the thing in China, because I have the chance that I have been seen by an agency called Jardin Orange. In French, it's Orange Garden, okay? And they are like agency of production, you know? And they're doing like kind of representing artists from all over the world to present their work in China. And they are super good in producing, you know. And I have the chance that it seems that people in China, they like my work, you know, and more the kind of humanoid Martians, super colorful, you know, that I'm doing on photo. And we have had the chance, thanks to them, we have done many installations, and we have actually a show in the Contemporary Art Museum of Shenzhen. Like 250 meters square of a show that is called We Are Not Alone, saying that those creatures have always lived with us. They're here. You know, I have done reinterpretation of classical paintings with them in the middle, saying they have always been here. Look, they were in the art, and you have not realized that, you know. And after, in the story, they have left their planet because they have consumed all the resources. Like others. And so they have tried to find a super nice planet to live, and they're right here. And as it was beautiful, as we all know, Earth is crazy. So they live with us now. And after we have the pictures of, you know, of on the photo, us doing stupid things in the street and everything. And thanks to this agency and the fact that there everything is super easy, we are building like super big sculptures, like we have 7-8 of more than 2 meter high. And so I arrive at the point that thanks to this exhibition, we're actually right now working, and figure cross it's gonna work, for super bigger project, really extra big. And we are pitching actually, and I really hope that it's going to be okay, because I don't want to have bad luck speaking about that, but I'm wishing that it's going to be okay, on surfaces that are on dimensions of thousands of meters square, full of sculptures, experiences, immersive things and everything. Yeah. So
you're getting the theme park that you want.
it's once more step going in this direction, you know.
Perfect.
So cross everything that you can for me. I hope it's going to work, because really, and so it means that we will have to go there. And I can imagine, I've been visiting China, or, you know, those countries like Taiwan or Japan, or, I mean, where you really feel the culture is another thing. You are a stranger, and you are like, you're discovering everything. I'm crazy with food there. I'm going to eat. I'm going to die of eating. and the thing is, the experience of having the chance to do installation like that, being there to see the people living with that, I cannot wait for that. So I hope it's going to be okay. Cool. Really.
That's
I know.
Great.
Is there a project that could be too big for you? You do all of these huge projects on this huge scale, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Is there a cap? Is there a ceiling to this?
Honestly, I'm going to say no, because if after you propose something with the good team and you say, okay, look, I'm going to say something. We are pushing for these super huge installations, those creatures living on Earth. I mean, it's a scenery that is already written and done for doing a movie, you know? And if one day there's the chance to do that, and if they tell me, build a team, with all those times, I know animation people, I know people that can do sound and everything. I mean, if you have with the good people, you don't have to be afraid of anything. I mean, it's going to be okay. It's just a question of having the time to do it. For me, I'm more afraid of that, you know? Not having the time to do well something. That's the problem. Yeah.
Sure.
I have a proposal. So, you know, we got the Statue of Liberty from France. And I think that we need the next big sculpture that we need needs to be from Nico.
Yeah.
And I think we need a big monster that just...
Where do
you know,
I sign?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's even bigger. That's even bigger. We need a new sculpture from France.
Yeah,
I think you need to spearhead this.
Yes, as official representatives of the United States of America.
Cool.
We will get this proposal in to those with the budget for it. Yes.
Cool.
Perfect. Yeah. There's so much great art out there, but like you've said this from the beginning of our conversation, of focusing on your universe of these creatures and monsters and being very specific and just having a really good lens on your style of characters, of like, you can get lost in the mix of just so much good art out there that I think then you have some people I think could very easily lose focus and derail themselves from what they do. So I think that's also a very good piece of advice for artists, of like, of course, look, we're surrounded by a bunch of amazing things, but like,
of course,
find
but you have
focus.
More you have more to learn looking that everything around you, more than thousands of artists every day doing super nice pictures. What is the thing that is going to help you more to find your thing?
Sure.
I have my doubt.
Yeah.
But after there's something that I love is that after I love meeting the people, you know, and I'm meeting artists and I have a lot of friends because you know, in all the events we're doing, festival, when we're painting and everything, for example, or it's also a lot of parties. That's a very good point. And the thing is, I love to see a guy painting and not understanding how he's doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like, wow, it's so well done that I don't understand. No, I have a friend, and probably he's going to listen to this podcast. I don't know. If not, I'm speaking about him. His name is Stom500 is his name. Mm-hmm. We're super friends. And he's doing things really specialized on artist painting and walls. And I see his paintings and I don't understand. I see him painting and I don't understand how he's doing. And I'm like, no, I don't understand how he's putting his light, how he's putting his color. And I'm like all the time, he's going to do shit this time, I'm sure. And no, no, never. So you see, and I really like this sensation, and it happens with a lot. Huh? I speak about him because we're super close, and I've seen that many times. But that's really a feeling that I love. Like, he's explaining me, and I'm like, okay, oh, well, that's the way you do the thing, you know. And really, that's the sensation that I love. Voilà. Learning, seeing the techniques live and direct, that's something very interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you've been an artist for a long time now, and it's great. Art is like something you never really master. There's something you can always just keep learning with, and getting inspired from other people is always great because they've gone down a path that's very different from you, but you're still, you're both artists. You're still both doing the same thing. Earlier you were saying like you don't really get, you try not to take too much from other people. Instead, you get inspired by story a lot of the time, and that kind of like helps build into your universe building. But I'm wondering, like, as you're doing like all of this traveling, do you get inspired by different cultures, and how does that influence your work?
For sure. So I'm spending a lot of times in Mexico, for example. And I have found, you know, in the culture there, which is full of creatures, really, what they call Aribrije is like super colorful creatures, mix of different animals. You know, I found something that I love there. Of course, the way they're dealing with the death, everything. Mm-hmm. So it has pushed me to draw a bit different things when I was there, feeling comfortable of doing things, you know, that, for example, this culture has inspired me a lot. And after, there's something that I love to do. I love to humanize any kind of thing, you know, because for me, that's very funny to, you know, a carrot, everybody knows what is a carrot. And so when you draw a carrot and transform it into a character, it's very easy for the people to be like, ah, but I know her personality because I've always have carrot in front of me. So intentionally, I know how she is, you know. And this guy has done it very sad. I was not imagining it like that, blah, blah, blah. And so when I go in a country, all the time I'm like, okay, so I'm going to draw a bit of their food, a bit of their animals, a bit of their this. And it's something that is making my bestiary bigger and bigger and bigger. So yes, all the time I'm taking things everywhere, all the time. Mm-hmm. But food a lot.
Food. I love that.
Yeah, a lot of food. We have not spoken about digital so much. That's funny. No.
Yeah.
We were speaking. And, but for me, it's really something that is so important, and it's taking a huge place in my work. The experimentation, the test, everything, I'm doing that on the computer. I love that. You know that I'm doing my sketch. I'm not sketching with paper. Never.
Oh, never. Cool. All digital?
I'm only digital, even a wall, everything. So I'm sketching with the computer, with the programs, and I love that. I mean, it's to try tricks. It's really, really amazing. Really, the possibilities are crazy too.
You are super easy to talk with, and I feel like we could just keep going down rabbit hole after rabbit hole. So the name of our podcast, Why Do You Create? Yeah. We have to ask that to everyone at the end. It's just, why do you create?
Yeah, why do I create? Honestly, that's funny because I was asking myself also this question when you invited me. And the thing is, I mean, the first thing that crossed my mind is, what would I do? Because now it's just like, I'm thinking like that all the time, you know, sleeping, and sometimes I'm waking up with ideas. I'm super excited with an idea that how I'm going to put that on digital or a paper. I mean, I it's just my reason of being, you know, I have that in the vein. But really, if it had to stop that work now, my God, what would I do? I don't know. You know, I would be super like, I'm not going to create anymore anything. It's over. Wow, I would be super sad. My God. You know, someone told me a few days ago that I love creating, but I'm super bad at making it known. Very, very, you know. And for example, in all the Instagram communicating, everything, I love the creation and I love the idea of creating things. I love having my brain, you know, turning. Mm-hmm. But my God, how I'm bad of making the people know the thing that I'm doing. And I said, yeah, it's a way of, it's subject of progression, because mm-hmm. in our world and in our generation, I found it's important to make the things known, right? Really.
Yeah.
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 I mean, like, that's that like, balance though. Like,
yeah, totally. But if you're making art, even if no one knows it, like, that's just speaking to how much passion you have yeah. with it. Yeah. It's just like, if you're just out there making art and you don't have a care in the world who sees it, I mean, that's passion right there. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's just like, you love creating.
Yeah, well, for sure that's passion. And for me, I mean, I would not let my place to anybody. I mean, even a weapon maybe, but if someone has a weapon on my head, I would say, sure, I have to stop. No, honestly, I have a chance like crazy. Yeah. And I know that, and I'm using every second of every day to just enjoying the job I'm doing. And I mean, creating things, it's crazy, crazy.
Yeah. And we thank you for the work that yeah. you're doing. You're making the world a more beautiful place with all these giant,
thank you very
gigantic
much.
Installations, these giant murals.
Bringing to yeah, life absolutely. The creatures that have been here the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah. Love your work.
You've had so many good, so many super nice words. Thank you guys. I yeah. have my self-esteem at the maximum
yes.
now. Thank you very much.
We're here. We're good hype people. We're here to help.
That's right.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with us. This has been great.
Yeah, thank you guys. I love to chat. So when you want, we do another one.
All right. Part two coming soon.
Part two. Yeah. Yep.
After your show, after the China show.
Oh, yeah.
Cross everything you can, huh? Really? Yeah?
When you get to Portland, we'll just
yeah,
chat all day.
With pleasure. With pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to our show. Why We Create is produced by the Wacom Experience Center in Portland, Oregon. I do the editing, Megan writes our show notes, and our music is produced by Forest Pond. If you would like more creative content, you can follow us on all the social media platforms, including Twitch. We also have a Discord channel where you can get insider info into the podcast, share your artwork, and stay up to date on everything we are doing. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next time.